You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
Well, this is a laugh that we share because my son is, he's pretty much the self-appointed president of the Faf du Plessis fan club. He tells his mates at school, very seriously, no, Faf is my best friend. And that's because you've been around a number of times, you've played cricket in the garden, you've had a huge amount of fun together. And I'm very grateful for that. He's a massive Faf fan, watches all the time, watches all the games.
No, I remember that very fondly, coming to our house for the first time and just him bringing me a little card that he made for me. That was so special. And we connected straight away. And that evening, could see that he was so excited that he didn't want to go to bed. And just did a little bedtime, read him a bedtime story. And it was so cool to see him just look up at me and like...
You can
just
read.
Imagine. You can, you can read. Oh, this guy can read as well.
Hooray!
My guest on the Dan Nichols Show this week is a cricketing icon. He's a fashion icon. He's a wine entrepreneur. He is a good friend of mine. And he's somebody, Faf du Plessis, who, unfortunately, as we realized over dinner last night, is not quite as young, neither of us quite as young as we used to be, because we were remarking upon this over dinner, 20 minutes into our dinner conversation that a decade ago might have been talk of wild nightclubs and great parties. We talked about sick kids, being kept up at night, getting children to school, and the respective injuries we've had over the last little while.
Yeah, tennis elbow was the main topic, but no, great to be back. I've obviously done the shows over the years. I prefer this. This feels a little bit better. You look better in this position as well.
Yeah, the face for radio, it's been mentioned many, many times. We've developed quite a cool friendship over the last years, a lot of it through wine. But it's one where I feel I know you better than you know me, simply because you very kindly, and it was a great honour, asked me to host a number of your book launches. And I said yes, not having seen your book and realised that it was 82,000 pages long and that Tolstoy would have looked at it and said, no, this is actually a bit much for me, I'll go for something shorter. But having read through it all, being able to get a handle on somebody, I think a lot of people, especially if they'd read the book, would have thought, hang on, this is not the person I thought I knew, because Faf on TV and cricket is this, you know, suave, slick, good-looking guy who wears all the cool clothes and is a bit of a clothes horse.
And the tattoos.
And it's an image that's very different to the Faf I now know, where there's a lot more to Faf du Plessis than just what you see on the outside.
Yeah, no, thank you. That book process absolutely broke me. I didn't think it was going to be that much time and work, and till this day I haven't picked up another book since the book process, because I had to read that book. My personality is one that really doesn't let anything go, so I proofread it that probably about 25 times. And yeah, it's really, everyone asks when is the 2.0 coming out, and it's, I can guarantee there's not going to be another book. But no, yeah, it was great to do the book tour with you. And obviously, I think our love for wine connected us to do the wine and the book launch together at some of the events. And through that, yeah, I almost see you as my wine dad, which is...
Can we go with like wine guru or wine confidant or...
Wine dad. You know, they always say that you need a good... people that's walked the journey before you, you know, like you can ask some questions around anything in life. And I go to you with all my wine questions. So I'm very grateful for our friendship. I think it's developed more and more. And I look forward to that when I don't spend as much time on tour and away from home, that there'll be many, many more evenings with some wine in front of us.
Now, my wife is well aware of this because for a while she was convinced I had this mistress hidden away somewhere who would message me at 3 a.m. and she'd see me on my phone. Who are you talking to? And after a while, she realized, because the answer was always the same, Faf, because you would be on tour in Australia and I'd get this message with you of a photo and you're at Penfolds trying some vintage Grange, and no messages about cricket, just really excited messages about a new wine you found somewhere in the world.
Yeah, no, I love that. And that's, we're very lucky that, you know, cricket has given us the opportunity to go to some really cool places. I've always enjoyed exploring cities and their cultures through food and wine. So I think that's where, you know, obviously the question always pops up around what wine do you suggest in this region. But generally I'm always, when traveling, in awe of how good South African wine is and how lucky we are for what we pay for our wine and the quality that we get, but also the amount of different wineries and wines that are out there that I'm not even... You know, every time I meet you, you introduce me to something that I haven't tasted before, and I'm absolutely blown away by it. So, yeah, we've got some super talented winemakers in our country.
We do, and I know you try and find them when you travel, and it's part of the adventure that you have. And that's an element of your cricket career that I think you've really taken to heart, where, yes, you're an exceptionally good cricketer, and that's allowed you to play all over the world, but you don't just go to the IPL or to the Caribbean or to the Big Bash to play cricket. You really do try and get stuck into the local culture, try and find out what's under the skin of the places you're spending time in.
And you have to. I think you would do yourself a disservice not to. I mean, everyone has obviously different personalities, but you always have one or two guys in the team that would just save their meal allowance money by, you know, I mean, there's a great story about a guy who used to play with Stian van Zyl. He used to take a box of avocados with on tour and just have avocado and toast. And that's great because that's him, right? But I think I certainly made a point from it to say to myself, listen, you're not always going to do touring life like this. You're not always going to see these amazing places. So it's not your money. It's travel money. It's meal allowance money. So see that as the opportunity just to explore what every country or every city has to offer you, because those memories, I think when you're done and playing the sport, obviously you remember all the cricket stuff, but it's off the field as well, where you get to this little small place and you had a great meal, you had a great glass of wine, and it connects you with different people. So I really love that about traveling.
And the travel that you do a lot now is over to India. It was Chennai for a long time, but now Bengaluru is home. And I feel that the nature of that city, your very close friendship with Virat Kohli, just what Bengaluru is, you found your spiritual home away from home.
Yeah, it's interesting because... You know, I did 10 years for Chennai Super Kings, still very involved with the Super Kings family, obviously Joburg Super Kings and Texas Super Kings. So when that auction took place, I expected then to just be going back to CSK, whereas RCB had different plans. They wanted a guy to come and captain them. And I think they probably had, you know, two guys in mind at that stage, especially with Virat being such a influential, big personality. I think in their minds they needed someone that has had the pedigree of doing it before in international cricket. You know, so I think at that stage it was only myself and Kane Williamson, probably international captains. So when that happened initially, there was a deep sadness around, you know, going to a new place, the relationships that I'd built over time there with some great people, you know, the coaching staff has been there from the beginning, a great relationship with Stephen Fleming, and a very successful franchise. So initial feelings was one of, you know, I'm going to miss the people here and I'm going to miss this place. But I think at that stage of my career was really when I was looking forward to what was the next chapter or the last chapter. And the last chapter, you don't know how long the last chapter is, but it was post-international cricket. I just retired from Test cricket and said that I'm not going to play one-day cricket anymore. So in my own heart of hearts, I was looking for the new challenge and something that really gives me purpose, because I love that word and I love what it stands for, and I love playing cricket like that. I feel I'm at my most hungriest when there's something else just from apart from cricket. So to captain RCB came with great purpose. It was like, this is for the next 3 years. This gives me great direction to what I want to do for the next 3 years, because I don't want to just play cricket for the sake of playing cricket. Like, I really want to be driven to achieve something special. So it's been an absolute... Oh, it's been so good the last 3 years, just to get to know the people there. You know, Virat is someone that I've always played against. Extremely fiery personality. Lots of clashes between myself and him. You know, two peacocks running on each other on the field there. But, oh my goodness, yeah, our relationship has blossomed. Very similar in our interest. He loves training, loves being athletic, loves food.
Kind of the three of us really love training.
You should be the face of it, actually. But then the worst part of our friendship has been his love for watches has really bankrupted me almost to the point where my wife's going, well, what on earth are you doing? Hi, my name is Faf du Plessis, and I have a watch problem. But no, it's been a great journey. I love playing cricket with him. So obviously the 3 years are done now, and the next cycle of the new auction will happen next year.
You talk about the watches a little flippantly, but I think it says something that is really important about where you are and your understanding of the success that you've had, in that you, without going absolutely over the top, you're enjoying the success that you've had. Whether it is buying yourself a nice watch or taking the family off on a cool holiday, you've done some great ones in Europe, I know, and you're saying to yourself, well, you know what, I deserve this. I deserve this reward.
Yeah, what we do, what we tell ourselves is that it's a great investment, isn't it? But he actually, I remember him telling me about it probably 6, 7, 8 years ago, where we sat at the airport in India, where South Africa was playing against India, and he was just talking to me about watches. And he was saying, you must absolutely just start buying watches because it will be the best investment you ever make. And I was like, well, I don't have the money to like spend the money that you do on watches. Like, it's just crazy. It's like, it doesn't matter because it's the best investment that you could make. And I didn't believe him, right? Because it just sounds not true, right? Because we get taught with, you know, property or markets or whatever, like put your money into that. And I have. Luckily, I remember my first year at Chennai, I was sitting next to Albie Morkel on the bus. And I was like, what do you do with, like, money? What do you do with your dollars? Because that stage didn't have anyone that was talking to me about that. And yeah, the greatest advice then was just to take all your money and put it into shares and shares portfolios and stuff. So he took out his phone and he showed me, look at this is what I put in and look where it is now. So I was like, wow, okay, I want to do that. So that was great advice. But yeah, COVID came and everyone started looking at luxury items as from a different lens, I suppose. And started the watch bug, and I've made some great investments.
Another fact that Albie Morkel and Virat Kohli are your financial advisors.
Albie Morkel is actually like extremely tight, like a South African. You know, I don't know if you find it, but everywhere we go in the world, all the other countries always look at South Africans and they think that we're very tight when it comes to paying for bills and stuff like that.
Because we can't afford any of them when we're overseas.
Guys, we've got rands, exactly.
The time you spent in India has exposed you to a world where you are absolute royalty. I've walked down the street with you in South Africa, and quite often someone will come up and say hello or ask for a photo. India is another level entirely, and out of the, 5-6 million followers you have on Instagram, a good kind of 80-90% of those are sitting either in India or Indians around the world. It's a fascinating space to be in. How long did it take to kind of come to terms with that and to then learn how to interact with your status as a demigod on the subcontinent?
Yeah, I remember early on, probably first year in Chennai, and being overwhelmed with the amount of people. But went to the mall pretty much on notice. You know, maybe 10 or 15 people would recognize you, similar like you would do in South Africa when you go to a mall, but very relaxed about it. And then the next year I came back and it was like, I went back to the same mall and it was maybe from 15 to 500 people. And the next year went back and the mall was like You cannot move in this mall without security. And that's the first time where I really went, okay, this is something that we don't experience in South Africa. But I'm also really grateful for that part of my journey, because what India has been amazing to teach me is that there's so little in that in the country of India. Like, there's a lot of poverty there, but the people is so, oh, they're so unique, man. Like 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever, you come back from a match, and there's just two Indian guys just opening the door with the biggest smile on their face, because for them, they're seeing someone that to them are super special. But it's, you know, go and wash your clothes at 2 in the morning and without never complaining. And I think to myself in South Africa, if you tell someone and find them 2 o'clock in the morning and say, just come and fetch my laundry and wash it for me, they'll tell you to bugger off. They're not doing that. No, so extremely grateful. Obviously, the IPL has changed the landscape of cricketers' lives dramatically. You know, before that, I feel deeply sorry for guys who were greats of the game, which would have been millionaires, you know, when it comes to the IPL. You know, like guys like Lance Klusner, you know, Gibbs, all those guys, Brian McMillan, all the guys that you would think if there was an IPL back then, how their lives would have been different. So I'm very grateful that I'm part of the generation where I got it towards the middle of my career. I was 26 when I went there for the first time. And fast forward now, you get guys, you know, 19, 20, straight out of school, earning millions. So, I mean, the cricket landscape has really changed. So make sure that boy of yours is an all-rounder. Keep, I would say, either a leg spinner, a mystery spinner, or an all-rounder that can whack the ball out of the park.
Well, this is a laugh that we share, because my son he's pretty much the self-appointed president of the Faf du Plessis fan club. He tells his mates at school very seriously, "No, Faf is my best friend," and that's because you've been around a number of times, you've played cricket in the garden, you've had a huge amount of fun together, and I'm very grateful for that. He's a massive Faf fan, watches all the time, watches all the games, and for me that's really cool, because as a dad I just love seeing my son so happy. And I know your own journey over the last few years has been not just IPL superstar and turning RCB into this absolute machine, but also just Faf the dad. And every conversation I have with friends of mine here in an entertainment or sports space, their perspective on who they are and what they do has just changed so dramatically as fatherhood or motherhood, parenthood has influenced how they look at the world.
No, that's so true. And I think you're right. I look at it when I meet the kid for the first time now through a different lens. Like, you understand that kid obviously is looking at someone that he looks up to and he sees on TV, but you also see the father and kid relationship there. So now I remember that very fondly, coming to ours for the first time and just him bringing me a little card that he made for me that was so special. And we connected straight away. And that evening, could see that he was so excited that he didn't want to go to bed. And once again, relate to my kids with it, you know. So you can imagine if someone that they would love to be there is there that evening. And, just did a little bedtime, read him a bedtime story. And it was so cool to see him just look up at me and like,
You can just imagine.
Oh, this guy can read as well. But just like excitement times a billion, you know, and just that is so special. So, no, he's a great kid and look forward to seeing what he does in the cricket field.
Okay, but if there's an element of parenthood.
It's a cricket team.
Yeah. ICC Division 6, so he'll take after his mum.
Yeah.
He has got to spend time with lots of cool people, but I think I've slightly distorted his expectations, because Jude Bellingham very kindly did a video for him at the Laureus Awards for his football team.
Wow.
And he's had, you know, Faf's read him a bedtime story. We're going to be in America later this year, and he's pretty convinced that we're staying at Messi's house. That's kind of where he sees, this is what daddy does.
Yeah.
So can we just stay at Messi's house and go watch a football?
Just pull out your phone and just send him a message. I'm sure he'll invite you.
I'm Faf's friend. Can you help out?
That'll be big, so Philly.
You get to do, aside from the creek, some really cool stuff, whether it's off to a Grand Prix or going to hang out with David Beckham, as you did not that long ago. Are there still pinch me moments? Are there still moments you think, oh my God, how is this all happening? How is this all real?
Definitely. I'm a big believer in that, like, always just really take things in that are special moments, and whatever they are. So sit there and celebrate them. So for me and my wife, she knows it's a big thing for me that when something cool happened, or you get to an amazing place or achieved something, to celebrate it. Because, like, especially cricket has taught me, like, you have to work hard for the victories, you know, and celebrate those victories, because most of the time it's hard, it's tough work, and that's the same with life. So we make sure that we get those small moments where we can celebrate it, and David Beckham was right up there. I speak maybe too honestly about my love for him. As my wife would ask, we always play this game, not my wife, but my friends, you know, the whole pass game. And
your dream night
mine,
away.
Mine was David Beckham. She's like, you're sick. There's something wrong with you.
Look, he speaks very fondly of you, although he does it slightly freaky when he sees you outside the house behind a tree.
No, yeah. After this podcast, he's never going to want to be even 5 minutes close to me.
He's somebody who's had a remarkable career post-football. He's a terrific footballer, but he's very shrewd, very canny. He's done some very cool stuff. Mm. You've started on that already. There's the wine business, which you're very involved with and doing really well with. But there will be a day, and I hate to break this to you, Francois, but there will be a day in the next 15 or 20 years when even you have to say, sorry, RCB, I'm now on 12 shots of cortisone a day and using crutches. I can't actually play anymore. How closely have you thought about that day and about what comes next?
Yeah, I see myself of, was it a case of Monsieur Benjamin Button in my cricket career? So hopefully that it just, like good wine, just keeps going. But yes, of course, there will come a day, and I do already feel the body is sore. And like, you wake up in the morning, I'm like, okay, this is what it feels like to be old. And I see myself as a little diesel engine when I start warming up. Like, it's really slow, but then eventually it, you know, pop, it starts.
Kicks into gear.
Kicks into gear, and then it goes, and then it's ready. I still love playing. I still love learning about the game. And I think the biggest challenge to when I would stop is family balance, in the life, that balance. Because for me, the reason why I've been able to play for longer, obviously physically, is one, but my family has been able to travel with all the time. So every tour that I go overseas, pull them along, and it's great, because you feel like you do, you know, you've got a healthy balance of family and your sport. But this year, my oldest daughter is grade one, so the first time Imri, my wife, went, she's in proper school now. Like, we can't not have her in school all the time, so we're not going to be able to travel all the time. So this year will be the first year where I suppose feel a little bit under pressure with what that feels like, not having that balance in my life. So let's have this conversation after this year. I might go after this year and go, you know what, this is not the balance that I'm looking for, because I'm very aware that I can play for as many teams that I want to, and it can fill up my year quickly, but it comes at a cost, you know, it comes at sacrificing that. And I've done that for a very long time with my family, of being like other family members being away all the time. And I wouldn't want to do my, I don't want to miss all my kids' stuff. So, that will be the most important reason that makes me consider stopping.
I'm trying to think, other than being a dad, what that life might include. There'll certainly be the wine component. Yeah. We've established you're not writing another book, and thank God, because I don't think I could read another one that length. I'm not sure I can see you coaching a team. I think you'd be very good at it, but I'm not sure if that's you, if it's a fashion empire, if it's a tattoo parlor. You've got all these very divergent interests. Where do you think you might head?
I think that my cricket brain is too powerful to just switch off. Like, I think my DNA of who I am, I will switch it off for a little bit, because my plan is to play longer, so I don't have to do anything straight afterwards. But to take a break, to breathe, to be with my family, to do holidays that I haven't been able to do, my first thing that I said to my family and to my friends is start saving up, which was about 5 years ago, the day that I retire, we're going skiing.
Ah.
Because I've got this insane, I just want to, I cannot wait to go and ski because it looks amazing. I'm a guy that loves adrenaline. I love doing stuff all day long. And then,
but I'm guessing for insurance reasons, you've never been able to.
I can see it's a very dangerous sport. And my personality would be like, okay, 15 minutes, black slope, let's go. So my 5 years ago, I said to my friends, let's start saving up. But the day that I retire, we're all going skiing, all of our family, all the kids. So they're like, any danger of you retiring? Because it's been 5 years. Like, when are we going skiing? So, yeah, that'll be the first thing that I do, is just take a holiday and go skiing. But I think eventually my cricket brain will be so strong, because even when I'm not playing, I'm always busy with cricket stuff. So, you know, whether it's planning for the draft in January for Joburg Super Kings, or September St. Lucia Kings, the team there, or obviously when you're involved with 4 or 5 teams and you captain them, like, I'm all in. Like, I don't just go there and play. I'm part of the day-to-day conversations. So I think what will happen eventually is I might be tempted for T20 coaching. I think that is something that would, because I would have done quite a bit of T20 stuff around the world and built some great relationships, there'd be something there that would interest me, because I think captaincy and certainly T20 coaching is very much more around man management and tactically good. Now, like, those are the two things. I think you don't really coach that much in a 4-week window. So I'm honest enough to understand that all players are not all great coaches, because it takes a bit of time to see all the other stuff around coaching. But man management and tactical sharpness is something that I would be able to just plug and paste straight away. So I think T20 coaching would be something. Commentary would be an interesting one, because commentary is, once again, I think when you have captained your country, you do have it's almost like the pedigree to be, he knows what he's talking about. But not necessarily the case. But I think commentary, what I see in commentators is it's almost harder than being a cricketer, because they're away from home even longer.
Relentlessly.
Yeah, and it's even lonelier, that life, because you're not with a team that you see all the time. It's like that commentator and that commentator and that commentator, and they just come in. So,
and you've also got to be able to be honest about people who, in many cases, quite recently you have been playing with, and now telling the world, oh, it's a rubbish shot, and because nobody's doing, and she's got to improve her game.
Yeah, exactly.
And that can also be tough.
No, definitely. So, I mean, I don't know where that's heading, but I would definitely take a break. And I hope that some other interest of mine would also be something that I get involved with. Recent paddle investor as well, so... see where that goes. But it's great. Yeah, I love the fact that it's just outside of cricket. There's different stuff that I have interest in. And actually, when I'm not playing cricket, I'm not a massive sport watcher, because it's so, you know, part of my life every day, that there's actually other stuff that I really put my energy to.
Which brings us back to the topic of wine and our shared interest there. And I'm still trying to get over the fact that I'm your wine dad, which makes me feel 107. You've got a new space out near Tulbagh. A friend of yours, Vaynant, is making the wine.
Yeah.
And then there's a rather good rugby player who's also involved.
Yes. I mean, great. Such a great story once again. Like I always say to you, I love wine stories. And Yeah, the wine, for me, the wine business has been one that's been great to see because it's, you know, it's slow growth, which is what we wanted. It's not anything that we planned differently. So, but it was 5, 6, 7 years on now. It feels like we're at this stage where we like we're ready for more, and we didn't know exactly what that looked like. But our paths crossed with Farida Priya. And I mean, he's, I don't know exactly what he does, but I know he does a lot of stuff around venture capitalism, stuff like that, around investing in companies. And so our paths crossed. And I think it, I mean, it's so great. One is cricket and rugby together again in South Africa, but also both of us went to Afi. So it's like this full circle around it coming together again. But they bought this beautiful vineyard in Tulbagh Wineries. And it's like, I mean, I think you've been there before.
I have. Right? It's magnificent.
I went there and I was like, oh my goodness. This feels like I'm somewhere in the south of France or like just mountains and beautiful. So amazing space. So, yeah, now they bought into our company, the Kleine Wijn, and their, I think their skills is exactly what we needed just to take the brand to another level. So Wijnand is based there now at Tulbagh Wineries. So a beautiful place where they've got some great ideas in terms of accommodation, restaurant, but it's so beautiful. So really grateful for that. And I think as I said, they're in the right time for us just to now go, okay, let's make this a little bit bigger, a little bit bolder. Let's take on a few more things. So watch this space.
Well, I can see that then leading into 3, 4, 5 years' time when you do finally say, okay, enough is enough of the cricket. And maybe the elbow has said enough is enough of the cricket. A chance to take this love of traveling, this love of life, this love of people, and become somebody who's maybe doing a Maldives T20 tournament here or the Hawaii T20 there, but also just reveling in doing the stuff that you really enjoy and get such reward out of.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. You touched on the elbow. I was actually, the beginning of this year was probably the first time where I thought, because I had an operation last year before the SA20, and this year post the surgery at beginning of the year, I was like, I feel like my elbow is gonna be the end of my career, you know. I feel like it's gonna stop me from being at my best. So very luckily got through the IPL, and the arm is feeling better, but I'm hoping that it's a case where it takes a bit of time and it just gets better and better. So for right now, it's not the end of my career, thankfully for that. But yeah, after that, it will just be a case of, I was saying to my wife, just enjoy things that I've never been able to really enjoy. Like, so I think South Africa, I mean, I'll keep saying it's such an amazing country. So all the little small places that I don't know, that I haven't had time to go to and see, would love to do that. And just look forward to the opportunity where you've got a routine where you're at home. You know, and you can just plan once a week, I'm going to go and surf with my girls, you know, stuff like that, which is not something that I've always been able to. Last 2 years because of my arm, and I haven't played a round of golf either in the last 2 years. So I know you're a big golf guy. So hopefully when the arm is at its best and the cricket career is done, then you can take me up on becoming a better golfer, because I think... my grip of my batting will tell you that it's not meant for a golf swing. It's a very much inside-out, over-cover fade. So I'm looking forward to you introducing me to a good coach that could settle in my entire routine and making me a better golfer.
All right, like, I'm already your wine dad, so we'll add golf dad to the list of things to do. I'm really looking forward to that, not just because it'll be great fun to do, but because it will signal the end of a really exciting chapter. And I don't wish it to be ending soon, but it'll give you the point where you can sit back and reflect and go, sure, that was one hell of a ride. And if I think back to the early stages of the book and how you spoke a lot of A.B. de Villiers taking the highway and you taking the dirt road to get to where you did, there's been a lot of hard work that's gone into becoming Fuff du Plessis today. And I think you can be enormously proud because you've got an incredible career, you've got a wonderful family, but most of all, you're a very fulfilled person. And not everybody gets to be able to say that. So
I feel like squeezing the most out of what you've been given is like a really, you know, a good trait to have. Like I don't know, like I said, I've not always seen myself as the most talented cricketer. Other people might say that when I was young or whatever, but just squeezing every single ounce of juice out of that talent that you've been given is something that I'll sit back very proudly and go, yep, I didn't think I'd go that far, that long, that wide, that deep. So very grateful for that.
Well, thank you for the time. Thank you for the friendship. Thank you for some great wine. And thank you for making me read the longest book I've ever read.
It's my pleasure.
You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.